welcome to another episode of Lion City Rock. If it's your first time listening, then welcome to Lion City Rock, the only podcast about Singapore's pop music scene that is recorded by two uncles living in two very separate locations, underground bunkers, for fear of being found out. Right. My name is Chris. And with me is my partner in crime, Kevin Matthews. Say hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Hello. And it's been an interesting couple of days, actually.
Yeah, for the Singapore music scene. Suddenly the spotlight again.
Yeah, wow.
So to speak.
I mean, when people say, oh, it's in the spotlight and stuff like that, I always think of it more like, not so much a spotlight, but more like a searchlight. You know those World War II things where they're trying to find the planes?
Yeah.
Singapore music seems like those planes, and then the spotlight is just
booming.
Most
of the time it's darkness. Then suddenly that's why it says searchlight or spotlight. Circle there.
Quick. Then everybody's like, okay, talk about this. And suddenly, it's gone. Can't find it.
Then the light is off, then darkness again.
Yeah.
Exactly, like every 10 years, this topic comes up. You know, like, what are we gonna do about local music? Get more exposure. The dread.
Yeah, for those confused by what we're talking about right now, it was just this recent article. That was put out. I think by the time you hear this, it'll be like a couple of weeks old. But
yeah,
for us right now, recording this, it was quite recent. And it talks about how the Singapore artists are calling for, or musicians rather, they're calling for more support and more like media time and more platforms and stuff to perform in. Which of course, you know, it's like deja vu all over again when I first read it.
To me, 10 years ago, it made more sense, right? If you talk about, because to me, more radio is more influential, maybe 10 years ago. It's not so much the streaming infrastructure or the various, you know, social media and all that, right?
Yeah.
So I think then it's important and critical. But I think now, 10 years later, you know, really, do we really need radio and all that? And why bother about Singapore anyway? Like, we've been talking about this for the longest time, right? So to me, it's like, I read that and I shrug my shoulders. I'm like,
I mean, for me, it was, I have no idea why that thing came about. I mean, it was
strange,
I've not heard of any rumblings or people complaining, because, I mean, it's on a major platform and stuff like that. And I find it, I mean, and I'm sure our good friend Buzz Lindis will agree that it's a bit false, in that sense,
in terms of
the fact that, oh, we can't find any platforms to play or get airtime, because as you said, airtime is now just a matter of getting on online. Go on YouTube, go on Spotify, go on everywhere, right? Apple and all that kind of stuff. So that part, you know, that's your airtime now. You don't need to go on TV, you don't need to go on radio.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, in terms of like platforms as well, I mean, if you're talking about things like, say, performing at indoor stadium, or Star Theatre or whatever. I totally agree. I mean, if you're only thinking of Esplanade, then I'm sorry, there's a very long queue for people who want to play Esplanade. Mm. And you know, if there's 100 people, you know, and every person takes one day, if you're number 101, you're gonna be 101 days in before you get a chance to perform at Esplanade. But there are so many small indie event organizers and smaller venues. They're offering their space for bands to go and play there. I think there's a small fee to be paid. Small compared to, you know, indoor stadium or Esplanade or whatever. You know, renting the Esplanade is not cheap. Yeah, so there are many, many different places like Phil's Studio, Center 42, you know, even the Aliwal Arts Center.
Mm.
So many of these small venues are making themselves known, or Sunrooms, the Sunroom place. Sunroom Sessions is where they do it.
Yeah.
Sailor, I think we've...
It's a bit of a non-story to me.
You know, this story is one of those that, should we talk about this? Let's find somebody I mean, I'm not dissing any of the people who were featured on the thing or whatever, because I totally understand that there more can be done. I mean, there's always room for improvement, and I'm all for that, right? So yeah. I think the main person they interviewed was Shaza, whose music I really like. I think we should try to get her on the pod one of these days.
Yeah, good idea.
And they had our good friend Jeremy Monterio. And another friend of the podcast, Dean, was also talking about getting his artists out there, which I totally understand. I mean, like you said, I mean, even casting it back to when the so-called heyday of the indie scene was going on, right, in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah.
That one, we only had like one main venue to, four main venues. There was the substation, the Marina Bay South platform, World Trade Center, auditorium, the outdoor amphitheater.
I mean, there were like varied clubs here and there, like Moods. Moods was a...
Moods. So
Moods, very short while.
Yeah, Moods was open for a few years, and that was started in the university anyway, so...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, actually, if you look at it, nothing much has changed since the 90s. maybe the peak was like 2011, 2012 in Singapore.
That was
like a peak.
Yeah.
And then it kind of leveled off to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Then COVID, then of course, right?
Yeah.
But I think beginning like 2012, 2013, like that, there was like, wow, a lot of things happening. So you know, if you kind of put it into that context, right, over the course of 30 years since the scene revived again in the early 90s, it's really been like that, like stop start up down.
Never goes beyond a certain point.
Yeah,
you know, where you get like, I mean okay, I'm not saying that, you know, everybody will be able to make it big, so to speak. I mean, not everybody can be the Sam Willows. Not everybody can be Electrical for that or whoever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or the Odd Fellows or whatever. Not everybody can get that line. And there's only very little space on the top line. You know, who else can you know, reach that those heights kind of thing, so to speak?
The band we are going to talk about.
Yeah, maybe. Yep. Actually.
Nice segue there.
Yeah, very, very good. Very, very good. So that was the story that we were angsting over the past couple of days. What's the story for today?
What's the story? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, speaking of the 90s, right? I mean, you mentioned Odd Fellows, but obviously there's another very influential band in the 90s, which were Padres. This is the 30th anniversary of the first Padres EP release. What's Your Story? So I think it's, as we've discussed, it's a good, I think, time to have a little discussion about that EP, about Padres, and what their impact, right, on the local scene was back in the day.
I mean, we recently had, it was last year, end of last year, we had Joe Ng come on. Joe Ng, who's the lead singer and basically the guy who co-opted Padres, put it all together. Padres was actually, you know, could we say, I mean, it wasn't like a band per se, right? It was more like a collective,
it's not,
right?
It's more like,
a musical.
It's more like revolving around Joe, la. So
yeah.
I mean, whoever he can find to kind of support him, that's basically how it happened, la. Because I think as he explained, once he had finished up with corporate toil, he wanted to do something different, right? He wanted to do more like guitar, bass, rock, right?
Yeah.
So compared to the electronic stuff that corporate toil had been doing, right?
Yep.
So then and he had songs, you know, that were written in that vein. So then he started recruiting band members. So the first, I think the first real band he had to kind of support him, I think, was the No Names.
It was a couple of Odd Fellows.
Vincent Names was originally with No Names.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like, yeah, so, yeah. So, yeah. So, So Vincent straddles the two of them.
Yeah.
But Patrick Cheng was playing on it.
Yeah. So famously, the story goes that I think they were playing at a gig, and then I think that was his first gig.
Yeah, yeah.
In this new persona.
In this new group. Yeah, yeah
and then
yeah.
he was asked, oh, what's the name of the band, right? Then yeah. he was like looking around, and I think this guy was wearing a Padres shirt. Like, I think it's an American sport. Like, is it football or baseball?
NFL?
No clue. No clue. So then he's like, oh, Padres. So then that's...
Because I think he had mentioned that the name that they had given them was Joe Ng and Friends.
Wow.
What a stupid name. No, I got to find a proper, a better name.
It really sounds like school band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So and Friends.
Sinyao school band.
That's why they were looking around for, and then he chanced upon that. And
yeah. So and I think the first recorded stuff from Padres was New School Rock 2.
Freak Out Frequency.
What's the other song? I can't remember. Hold Me.
Hold Me Home, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yep. So that was the first one, and, you know, really loved that. I mean, of course, New School Rock 2 is legendary in the context of the local scene. And then we had the Singles Club.
Which was the year after 1993. Yeah.
Yeah. So released with Big Old Magazine, free, so to speak. Right. So it was like an EP, singles lah. So A side, B side. So the A side was Radio Station, which of course is an iconic local song. And then you have Angel on the B side. And then I think Joe wanted to do an EP. And I think this is where, like, the label that I was on, Odyssey, basically.
Right.
Through Tim, I think, because I think Pat had the arrangement at Odyssey.
Okay.
So, okay. I mean, I, you know, I can still remember because it was all around the same time, early part of 94. I was recording the Love EP. So we were recording it at Boss Studios. And I recorded it with Pat on drums and we had Ben Harrison on guitars. So Joe also was there actually. During the recording session. And then I think if I'm not wrong, when Joe was there, he was like, oh, I think I shall record my EP here.
That's how the whole thing got together.
And you know, basically I think the lineup Pat and Ben and
oh, okay.
Also Francis Frightful.
Francis Frightful of Opposition
Bass,
Party.
Opposition Party on bass.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
So that was the backstory of What's Your Story?
Yeah, and What's Your Story was released, I think, on a CD CD format.
CD,
as well as a cassette. This is an EP, so there are only like five tracks on this thing.
Both, I guess they repeat it on both sides.
Yeah, the cassette repeats each side. If your cassette player had, you know, one of those like loop systems where you can just repeat the side A and side B, you could get this thing going, like, you know, as long as your batteries or whatever.
Repeat.
It's like totally repeat. I mean, you know, it's a very interesting cover. Do you know, I could not get any info about the cover.
I can't remember. So I think back then, maybe Joe explained to me, but now I can't remember. Because the whole point, I think it's, you know, What's Your Story? I think it's the album cover is kind of a reflection of on teenage story, track three, right? Yeah. So yeah, it kind of has the teenager, the cover, smoking and stuff like that. Something teenagery.
Something teenagery.
Like smoking.
Or putting on makeup. I mean, condoning smoking as a teen.
Is it a mirror or is she talking to someone?
Gosh, you know, it looks like a mirror.
But it could be
somebody talking.
Yeah.
Okay. So the back, you know, there are two figures here, right? The one on the right, it's her back, and it's a female.
Yeah.
But
correct.
Yeah, but I can't really tell.
Interesting,
from this
right?
angle.
Interesting. Also, because I've been looking at it, right? Also, and I'm like,
yeah,
I used
was that
to,
a mirror or was that somebody else looking across?
I think when the first glance I remember seeing it, it was a mirror. But I think, you know, also at the same time, I was like, is it actually two persons?
That's yeah.
brilliant, man.
That's very
arty.
Yeah, that's why. I miss this kind of
Ah, exactly.
Album covers or whatever, this kind of artwork for music, where you can put in all these things and then that's what I liked about the so-called olden days was where you put all these things in so that people can just look at it and pour through it, you know, just see what they can spot or whatever. Which is why, I mean, for us, AWOL also, we did that. But I was very, very blatant. We're just shoving everything that, like, if you ever see that cover, it's just a collection of items that was photographed.
It's a painting, are you saying, right?
Yeah, there was a painting, but it was a picture of a painting. But anyway, yes. So that's what's your story. That's the story of what's your story in brief. But now I think it's time we get into the album proper, and then we'll go through the track one by one. Okay, so for me, I was the first time I heard this. I mean, I just recently heard it again. I was a bit surprised by the fact that they opened up with this first song called Joni.
Joni, yeah.
Only because up to that point, I've known them as, you know, a band that's like, I mean, if you listen to songs like Freak Out Frequency or Radio Station, very, very hard. I mean, harder than Joni.
Well, they've had stuff like Angel. I mean, it's very 90s. I mean, if you listen to all the songs, maybe except for the last one, but the first four tracks at least, very, very 90s. Mm. Right? It's that kind of music that was that kind of sound, right?
Yeah.
Which, of course, is very driven by Ben's guitar work, you know.
Mm.
So whatever he was doing more or less defined the sound. Right, I mean, by default, that's going to happen, right?
Mm.
And of course, you know, Joe has, you know, he has his own, you know, interesting way of singing, right? His singing is quite interesting.
Yeah, his voice is so distinctive,
right?
And you hear it only, you know, it's Joe.
Yeah, and the way he kind of phrases, right?
Mm.
The way the lyrics, right? The way he phrases it. It's interesting, it's not cliched, it's not kind of typical. And you kind of listen to it and it's like, you know, it's very uniquely him. Right. Which I think that's what gives Padres its distinctiveness. I mean, the songs, the lyrics, you know. I mean, like I said, the music is great, but you know, but it's quite typically 90s. Nothing wrong with that, but that's what it is. That's what it is. Like, so if you talk about Joni especially, right, if you listen to it, it's like you say, it may be surprising, but it's actually reminds, because a lot of the, especially the early 90s, at least the first half of the 90s, is very much a reflection or of like 80s alt rock, right? It kind of flows from there.
Correct.
So obviously, you know, one of the biggest bands of the 80s alt rock is REM. Mm. So you hear REM kind of Bert's guitar,
right?
In this song, Joni is very kind of the folk rock, very clean, appreciated guitars, very radio friendly. You know, it's like a single. I can imagine it being played on the radio in that time, right? That's kind of songs, right? So it has that thing like REM or even like, if you go earlier, I mean, the 80s, so you have Rain Parade and you know, all these kind of bands, right? That's so when I hear it, it's like, oh, yeah, this is you know, it's my kind of music, straight away, like, you know, Birds, right? Birds guitars, yes, right? Rickenbackers, right? Yes, let's go for it.
I think this was also quite particular about Joe Ng's songwriting. I used to call it short burst writing. Each verse or each phrase is just a short burst of things, you know, like mental picture or situational, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then he hammers home the point in the choruses. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like radio station, right? It's like, oh, radio station, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's a tiny little like vignette.
And then
the chorus is like, you know, we're so young.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have time.
Yeah.
So it's very, very interesting, like, style of the way he writes music. And more so than just, oh, I need a verse, I need a chorus, I need a verse, I need a chorus. But somehow, to me, you know, it always seems that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, definitely, like I said, you know, have to, again, highlight Ben's guitar work, you see. Right, because the guitar work is so attractive, right? So appealing, right? Especially the chorus, right? With the slide, right?
Mm.
It's perfect. I mean, it supports the song so well.
Yeah, it supports the song.
So
yeah,
as opposed to
you know, I'm a guitarist and this is what I can do kind of vibe.
Yeah.
As the Fast Colors, when we play a radio station,
yeah,
I'm very, very aware of what Ben has done.
Yes.
And I'm very also, I sometimes find myself catching myself, right, to not try to emulate whatever he's done, only because I know I won't be able to do it. Because he has a certain sound.
Yes.
There's a distinct way of playing, even like something as simple as a slide, right? He has a particular distinct way of moving the slide from low to high or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's not just, oh, you just play it out, but there's a certain pacing which, you know, sometimes... Yeah, when I play, I'm like, okay, I don't want to try to even, you know, attempt to get close to whatever he wants. His sound, for one, that's one thing. And the way he hits the strings, because he can be very heavy, and, you know, in a very aggressive kind of style of playing.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And I was just thinking, you know, there is another kind of maybe understated influence on that first song. Which brings me back to the television second album, Adventure.
Right, okay. Interesting. There are
a lot of these kind of appreciated guitars on it, folk rock style. You know, television, basically, right, unless you know of them and have heard them, right, they are usually under the radar. But the music is just so ahead of its time, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's the beauty of you know, we're still talking about first song, right? That's brilliant. The you know, it's the beauty of something like this, right? Because you have Joe and then you have Ben, you have Pat and you have Francis, right? Right. Yeah. You can hear the influences, right, are so spot on, right? Right. It's not just a straight lifting, it's basically a combination of all these things.
Correct.
That's what I mean, you know, this is like I said, this is the kind of stuff I love. So and straight Pat, away, it's like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, Pat Cheung is on drums, right? So
drums, yeah.
Which was, I mean, I still remember seeing the first time I saw their music video, you know, and I'm like, oh, I had no idea that Pat could play like that. If you listen to this EP as well, you can hear him doing things that I know, back then I had no idea.
Pat is...
In terms of servicing the song, that's what I mean. You know, he kind of sits in to the groove quite well.
Yeah, Pat is a pretty good drummer.
A lot of people,
a lot of people don't realize.
if we need to do Fast Colors as a trio, he can go on drums. I can do bass.
Anytime is possible. Oh, I can play bass and you can play guitar. So
Okay.
Well, let's talk about.
Sorry to carry on on the first track.
So sorry.
So Sorry, which is the title of the second track.
Yeah, second track. So this, I guess, is more in line with what you imagine, like, what this sound would be, right? So you still have the kind of REM influence there, but there's a bit more like you get like Sonic Youth.
Yeah, it's a bit harder.
Kind of the harder, the discordant guitars, Etonal guitars. Yeah. Right, very guitar-driven rocker. It's really, when you talk about indie rock, this is what you imagine.
Yeah, actually that's true. You talk about indie rock, listen to this. Yeah, this could be our Singapore Indie Dictionary. You know,
yes.
What does indie rock sound like? Track 2 by the Padres. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Even more so than I say, actually, like I mean, now that you mention it, to me, right, I think there's even more so than, say, the Odd Fellows or any of the other guys, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of captures the vibe.
Yeah.
Again,
it's the guitar sound now. Because, you know, Odd Fellows' guitar sound is not like that.
It's back then.
Yeah. It's quite different. So again, it's very much driven by that kind of sensibility, of course, it's again a lot of kind of television, REM, Sonic Youth, you know, they're very
late 80s.
Alt rock, what we used to call alt rock, you know.
Yeah.
Which to me is still so much superior to the so called indie alternative rock that turned up in the 90s.
And I mean, this is pretty much it's pretty much a very straightforward. I mean, this one is really like let go and then see where you all see how far we can take it kind of thing. I mean, the rest of the songs are a bit more restrained compared to this one to me.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, I mean, you know, back then, like in 93, 94, there were definitely a core kind of fan base for kind of local indie rock. There's certain expectations on what it would sound like. You know, right? That's kind of the big old.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So definitely kind of all the boxes are ticked, you know, when it comes to something like Padres, right? It's like, you really want to say, what was indie rock, right? You say the local indie rock is like, this is the album to listen to, right?
Yeah.
Straight away, this is it, classic, right? Classic.
Yeah.
Right, definitive, right?
It's
like, and it's kind of funny because, 30 years later, it really is to me, timeless, still sounds very fresh. Yeah,
this, especially this song, right? So Sorry, right? It sounds like something that a lot of the young guys are doing now. Your bands, Belly Star, Intermission, you know,
because the influences are more or less the same, right?
Yeah.
The kind of, you know, I mean, it all goes back to that, like I say, it's the mother load. So,
yeah, that's true.
Right? You kind of know, that's why it all comes from.
Yeah, that will take us to the next track, which is Teenage Story. Never know when it's really love or
so this is the one that was played by John Peel, right? The story.
18th of June, 1994. And he played two tracks from this EP. And the first one that he played is this one, Teenage Story, which is where the title of the EP comes from. I mean, that's in the lyrics. What's your story? Did somebody send him this EP?
I don't know whether it's true, the big old guys. I don't know.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
That it was through the big old guys. That's how it happened. And, you know, John Peel basically would just play anything that he likes. So it doesn't matter where it comes from. In fact, it's more his brand, right? This is from Singapore kind of thing. Right?
Yeah, no, that's true.
That would be very much his brand, right? To find something that's obscure in that kind of thing. Right, which is, you know.
I mean, I gotta ask, was this the first time that a Singapore band was on his show?
I think so, on John Peel, but I mean, there was some, I don't know whether some discussion before or somewhere I read or heard that either October Cherries or Truck or
Okay.
Or even the Quest also were played on BBC before.
Yeah, but I think the Quest one was a bit later.
But I mean, either October Cherries or Truck is also sounds like a possibility because they were in Europe, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They would have been
in
the same.
It might. I don't know. I just vaguely think I recall. I don't know. I think I'll ask Richard Kahn.
yeah. gotta go and talk to him again.
Yeah. So I mean, on that point, right? I mean, of course, it's nice to have it on your EPK or your press kit.
Yeah.
To have it on your plate on John Peel. Yeah. But beyond that, I'm not really sure, you know, what kind of impact it actually has. So of course, it's nice. You know, it's impressive.
But I guess, if you wanted to hear the new thing that isn't your mainstream thing,
it's his show,
right? People can hear that, right?
Yeah, but I mean, back then, like what I mean is back then, like, because, you know, how do you get distributed to UK and things like that?
Oh, right? That's true.
No, but not like now, at least, if, you know, like what they're doing with Buzz and Joe Eats, right? They're having it on those podcasts and radio shows. Right, but now, if you are playing Ballet Star or Intermission or Because in Space, you can just point them to the streaming link straight away.
People can hear
it. You see, so it kind of makes more sense now. Back then, right? That's always the problem because, like, I remember, like I released a couple of Popland CDs, and you're thinking, okay, how do I get it out of Singapore?
Right. Yeah.
Right, unless you have some distribution.
Yeah,
which I was lucky to have. I had some US distribution for the second album, right? This San Francisco label. So, like, you know, that makes a lot of difference now, right? To have something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can have, that's the whole point now is to get attention in. It's less about, you know, exposure in Singapore. Forget about exposure in Singapore. You want exposure overseas.
Yeah. This song to me is also encapsulate that vibe as well.
Yes.
Very, I mean, dare I say it, even Odd Fellows-y.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite melodic.
Yeah, it's melodic.
Like, the chorus. Like,
Unity song chorus. Is melodic. Yes, yeah. Correct.
It's got quite a lot. I mean, there's a real strong hook, right? What's your story? I mean, that's a very strong hook lyrically as well as melodically.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And it's just lie and you're horny, right? So that's the actress attention straight. Yeah. Is it horny?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, again, that's the kind of gift that Joe had, right? He's able to have this kind of very indie rock kind of stuff, but still something you could play in a radio, especially in the 90s where they are more open about kind of these kinds of indie sound.
Yeah.
Because of Nirvana, right?
Yeah. Thanks to Nirvana. Thanks, guys. Mary Sid,
yeah.
We've had two girls feature on this thing already. We have no idea who they are, right?
No.
Who's Joni, who's Mary, and who's...
Who's Mary?
Yeah.
So you used to joke these are the generic names. Oh, Mary, yeah.
If you need a girl, a female character,
we'll get Mary. Lucy Mary.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like, cannot say Karen. One Karen.
Yeah.
Even then, there's a song about Karen.
That's true.
But this one is like it's more kind of punk rock, quite stripped down in a sense.
Raw, quite raw,
catchy, so quite Nirvana esque.
Yeah, early Nirvana.
Early Nirvana, kind of punk, garage kind of sound, right? Yeah, I like the song. It's very catchy. Right, the chord progression, the riff is catchy, lah.
The two chord thing got me catchy. It reminded me. Of, I mean, it's not the same, but it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Oddfellows.
Lost my head.
Yes, lost my head. That's right. Yeah, same.
The two chord riff. Yeah.
Yeah, and that fairly a bit in your face-y kind of voicing as well. Yeah, and that brings us to the last track, Whenever Her Heart Sang. He's at the bus stop waiting for someone or anyone to come aboard for a reason to hold on. Should I catch his smile, everything will drift into place, into scenes I've been, and through scenes I don't wanna see again. Whenever a heart sang, whenever a heart sang, never a heart sang. Now, if you think that this is some sort of schmaltzy tune, you'd be right.
it is. Yeah, and it's just acoustic. It's just Joe and an acoustic guitar. That's it.
Was he playing it? It wasn't him playing it.
No, it's not him playing it. But
yeah, okay.
It's him and what you hear.
It's just that.
But it works. Because Joe's, you know, Joe's voicing's quite distinct and his lyrics are quite interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, arrangement-wise, there's nothing going on. Traditional ballad kind of thing.
Yeah, la. I mean, it's very straightforward, kind of just sit down, play guitar, sing, that kind of. I mean, but it's also very, very, it was the thing. Remember, we talked about this before as well, like every band, no matter whether you're a rock band or whatever, there must be one track which is just
at least one track.
One track, you and guitar, singer and guitarist, and then that's it.
Yeah, yeah. No, the funny thing is that when I listen to it again, especially the way it kind of ends off, it actually reminds me of Roger Waters.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, Pink Floyd had it, right? This idea of like the pigs, right? Pigs on the wing.
Okay.
All right. So that, I mean, and that to me, right, I personally very influenced by that. Right. So I have a lot of songs that are just me and guitar. Right. So if you listen to, like, in fact, that's where Gum comes from. It comes from Pink Floyd.
Right.
Like Pigs on the Wing, like that when he first started listening to it, I remember thinking, wow, this is fantastic. I mean, when you consider all the kind of prog rockish things in that album.
Yeah. They put together. Yeah.
But that was like my favorite one.
Okay.
Yeah, so that had that vibe for some reason. I never thought of that before until I listened to it again, and I was listening to the end. I'm like, oh, this is very Roger Waters. I'm like trying to imagine.
Yeah, not too sure that Joe was very influenced by.
Exactly. I was thinking, could it be? But the way he kind of ends it very much like.
Right.
Pigs on the wing. It sounds like that, right? Because like you end the chord and then you sing the last line.
Yeah.
That's very Roger Waters. Have you heard a baby crying from the rubbish dump? He said, it sounds like my dog
looking for his mom. It's a bit, to me, it was a bit surprising that the whole thing started off with a slowish kind of song, ends off also with a slowish kind of song.
Yeah.
And all the heavy stuff is in between.
In the middle.
You know, all the fast-paced stuff is in between, which is like, you know, kind of strange because normally you think that, oh, you want to kick off with something that's, like, you know.
Yes.
Bam, bam, bam.
Teenage stories, should I open it? Like, okay. Right?
Yeah.
Teenage stories looks like the one to open it, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
especially with
the title track. I mean, the title is from that song.
And it, out of all,
the fast or the louder songs, that one has like the most chance of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, presumably la, if you had to kind of arrange this for streaming, you'd probably do it differently.
You know, I would kick off with Teenage Story. I would put
I would
put, you know, maybe Joni in the two spot.
Yes, that kind of makes more. Makes so-called sense, lah.
So-called, right?
So-called.
So this one ending off, I understand this, but, you know, just like that. Very simple, very sparse. Sparse but intense, as Zhang Kang would say.
Yeah, definitely, you know, 10 upon 10, lah, this EP.
I mean, you may not like indie music. No, okay. I mean, those who are, like, weaned on K-pop might find this a bit of a big ass, lah. But it's a historical record, is what I mean. It's like an artifact to me, lah.
Yes.
Because it's quite well recorded. I mean, the sound is
really it is.
But it still carries the vibe of your late 80s stuff that you were talking about. You know, your mild or phony accent. You know, the vibe still carries on to this, even though that would be, what, 6-7 years down the road since that period. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I mean, I think one of the thing that really defines the so-called 90s, the zeitgeist, right? Mm. Now, 90s local music scene zeitgeist is this idea of the demo.
The demos, it's not like, you know, everybody printed like, you know, thousands of copies of demos.
No.
50 if you're lucky.
Yeah.
100 if you're very, very rich.
Hundreds.
You know,
hundreds.
100 is like, 100 is like crazy already. So,
yeah,
you know,
100 is crazy.
So whoever has a demo, you're like in that rarefied air, like you need the rarefied air of owning demos from bands kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, I think also the fact that the scene grew enough, right, for us to be able to go into studios and get recorded is to me, is an achievement.
It's actually quite fast because your demo period ended sometime around maybe 92 per se.
Yeah.
I'm talking about demos in like Boombox demos, right?
Yeah.
By 92, you know, you had your singles club kind of thing. You know, you had your new school rocks and all that. So So recording your demo was actually in a studio already. In that, you could probably record a demo in there already. So I mean, New School Rock was just a very expensive demo, lah.
It was just basically showcase into.
Yeah, it's just a showcase.
Get something that radio could play.
Yeah, and
radio's,
and, you know,
radio's not going to play your demo cassette, please.
Correct. But yeah, that's what I mean. Like, the quality of that was like such that by the time New School Rock 2 particularly came out, the quality had jumped up so much in the space of 3-4 years, maybe. I don't think it was that long.
And that was what was the significance of New School Rock 2 in terms of, getting the airplay. So that kind of, once they start doing that, then, you know, they are kind of setting a precedent already to say, we'll play local music, right? So, I mean, that is very significant, right? And I was just about to say that it's very fast because I remember for me, right, the New School Rock 3 was January 93, right?
Yeah, within
By August, I released Democracy, you know?
Right, yeah.
So it's like fast within that year, how much things happened. 93 was a crazy year for me.
So if you guys have not heard What's Your Story, pop on to the YouTubes where you can find it.
We'll put a link.
We'll put a link there.
Because it's not on any of the streaming platforms. It's not on any of the streaming platforms.
Yeah, so go and check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, go check out What's Your Story and tell us what you think of it. Put it down in the comments on our socials. We're on Instagram at Lion City Rock. We're on Facebook also at Lion City Rock. Let us know what you think. Tell us if you got any other Singapore albums or bands that you think we should check out and we could do a review of that as well. Yeah, I mean, you know, we were I was planning to do some recommendation thing, but we're running out of bandwidth.
Recommend Padres Fast Yourself.
Yeah, this will be our recommendation. So go check this one out. Have a listen and let us know what you think. And you know, share this podcast with all your kakis and friends. And, just go and share this podcast with everybody. Thank you very much for listening to us go on about what's your story. Yeah,
thank you.
Let us know which band you'd like us to feature so that they can tell their story.
Yes,
as well.
That's right.
And let's keep the Lion City rocking, whether or not, you know, we still need more platforms or airtime.
Yeah.
until then, bye-bye.
Ciao.